Welcome to Breakfast at Beverley's, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the fascinating world of transport and logistics. Join your host, Beverley Bell CBE, an industry expert and former senior traffic commissioner, as she navigates the highways and byways of the industry. From sunrise to sunset, we're here to accompany you on the road, bringing you insights, advice, and thought-provoking conversations with notable guests in the field. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Breakfast at Beverley's. Today we have a remarkable guest, the very lovely Pete Rushmer. Pete's an entrepreneur, he's a coach, he's a mentor, and of course he's the founder of the award-winning Flagship Partners. With over 20 years of leadership experience, although you wouldn't know it looking at him, he specialises in the transport and logistics sector. He's grown his business to a team of 12, serving over 500 clients, his main focus being on making businesses safer, greener and greater. I'm thrilled to have the icon that is Pete Rushmer here today, and I really look forward to speaking to him.
Well, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Early start for both of us. What have you had for breakfast?
Very much. Well, I've had a very lovely breakfast this morning. We had blueberries, strawberries, melon, some granola and some yogurt. It was beautiful.
And is that your typical breakfast?
Not always, but it was definitely up there as a good breakfast. I'm a big fan of when I go on holiday and get to have like an all-you-can-eat breakfast, and I just will have sausages and bacon and eggs and but at home I'll tend to go for a late breakfast usually. Somewhere between breakfast and lunch, normally some poached eggs on toast, something like that. Bit runny.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious. Do you have a morning routine?
I do have a morning routine. Generally, it does change from day to day occasionally, but my preferred routine is an early start. Haven't had an early night and a good night's sleep, and I'll normally do a bit of work first thing. Normally, I do my best thinking first thing in the morning, so I'll normally organise to face a challenge, face down a challenge, work out something important. And then I tend to go and I'll train, go to the gym, go for a run, something like that. And then I tend to face the day once everyone else has woken up at sort of 8, 9 o'clock, go from there.
Yes, it's like that golden hour, isn't it, before the emails start pinging in.
Exactly, yeah.
And yes, I like that, although I must confess I don't actually go for a run in the mornings, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So in terms of challenges for the day,
sure.
If you've got that nightmare job that you know you've got to do.
Sure.
I had to do it yesterday with getting a proof into Kevin Rooney, and he was very gracious when I submitted it 10 minutes before the hearing. I'm a lastminute.com.
Sure.
I'll do it right at the end, and it'll be hanging over me all day.
Yeah.
Are you the opposite? Do you do it first thing? Get it out of the way?
So that's a really good question. So I tend to do my most challenging work first thing, but I am also a delayer, so I will do things. So it'll be the very last morning before it needs to be done. So it will be done in the morning, but it'll always be quite late. So, and I remember being like that when I was at school and homework and things like that. I think I always try and achieve and cram so much that I end up going, that'll be okay. And then just getting to the point of no return where I really need to get this done now. So I'm going to make it happen.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about Flagship Partners. What do you do?
Sure. So Flagship, our consultancy and training company, we're based in Peterborough, where I live. And we help our clients, who are mostly fleet operators, we help them become safer, greener and greater is our sort of key slogan and vision. But ultimately, most of them are operator license holders. So we help them with training and consulting work around that. So we do ongoing work with clients where we help improve their systems and processes and help them professionalize the way they work from a operator licensing perspective, and as well with some health and safety and employment law bits too. And
who's we?
We, okay, so there's a team of us. I think there's 13 or 14 of us in the team now. We've got a couple of part-timers, so I never know whether to fully count them. And we have a few subcontractors too. The team, we have transport consultants. So their role is they train the transport manager CPC qualification. They'll do refreshers.
That's both goods and PSV.
Yeah. And they will help our clients with, they'll also we do do some driver CPC training as well. And we will also help our clients on an ongoing basis. So sometimes we backfill or we'll mentor transport managers in role to help support them. And I've also got an HR consultant and I have a health and safety consultant. And we also do some system stuff as well. So one of my guys is a systems specialist. So he builds online courses and things like that. So we'll often digitalize people's training, the induction courses, things like that, to try and get away from this first day brain dump of here's a driver handbook, here's everything you need to know, and off you go. We try and streamline that for the companies too.
So how did you end up working in the transport sector? When you were a little boy, did you think, Mummy, I want to be in the transport industry? Probably not.
Yeah, no, not at all. So I always wanted to be a professional footballer, but I was nowhere near good enough. I always wanted to do that. I never really knew what I wanted to do. I realise now, I look back, and I was always entrepreneurial. So I was realising the other day, thinking about it, at the age of 12, I already had my first business. I was cleaning cars and cutting lawns and stuff like that, knocking on neighbours' doors to earn a few quid.
Is that entrepreneurial or is it just being a hard worker? What's the difference?
I think to be good, you need to be both. I think you do need to be both. And
so that you're making enough money from what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So, but from a transport perspective, I worked in my early 20s. I worked in an accident repair centre, and we looked after trucks and vehicles. And I was always into anything with wheels and that kind of thing. And actually, I got lumbered with the vehicles. They were a restricted operator, and they've got some vehicles that they used to bring cars in on to have repaired. And I got lumbered. I was mid-20s. I was the general manager, or like mid to late 20s. I was the general manager of this accident repair center. And I'd been involved with running that vehicle. But what happened was one of the company had eight operating centers. They had eight different body repair centers, and they run a vehicle at each of them. And one of the other vehicles had been pulled over and was overweight, and it had caused a bit of an issue. And the conversation went something like, Pete, you're smart. Can you learn this stuff? So I self-taught. And I think that's always helped me, because I really empathize with particularly restricted operators, but people who are sort of new into the industry and have just often been, I say lumbered with the running of the vehicles. But, you know, they kind of get given the running of the vehicles, have to learn. And there's sometimes not the support mechanism in place that to help them really do a great job. But that was a real steep learning curve for me, and I actually really enjoyed it, and I found that I was good at it and I understood it, and I'm very proud of the system. I'm proud of the way it is in the UK. I'm proud that we've got a robust regulatory system that it is, and I take pride in helping people to understand, navigate and improve the way they do things.
Yes, and I think you said sometimes there isn't the support. I would say often there isn't the support. You and I were talking earlier about professionalising the sector, professionalising transport managers, which is a conversation for another day. But one of your vision statements is about being greener.
Sure.
There's lots of talk about, you know, the green agenda, etc. How does that translate into the business that you do and the services that you offer?
Sure. Yeah. So I think the first thing is it's very tricky. We work with many small and medium size operators. We have worked with bigger operators because we do the earned recognition accreditation, but most of our clients tend to be small and medium size operators, and it's really challenging for them to navigate the green agenda at the moment. There's a lot of technological advancement. There's a lot of expense involved in. You know, if you were to go and buy an electric truck, it's going to be a huge investment. So there's some real challenges for people to understand and knowing what's right for them.
And lots of uncertainty.
And one of the things I always try and focus on with our clients is about controlling the controllables. So we really focus currently on the education piece. So we have a course available, which we partner with one of my old Volvo Trucks colleagues, Darren. We do a carbon literacy training course, which helps vehicle operators really understand the language, because we talk about green, we talk about carbon neutral, carbon zero, And for some people, that's overwhelming to really understand what that actually means. What is an electric vehicle? What is a hydrogen vehicle? You know, what are the differences? So there's the education piece at the moment, which I think is controlling the controllables to an extent. We can educate ourselves around these different things. And off the back of that training as well, there's a plan put in place to reduce the carbon. So that's something that we can start to look at doing. And one of the ways we do that is, at the moment, that has some impact for operators is around reducing their fuel consumption as best as possible. So
that's always been top of the agenda, isn't it? How can I save money on fuel?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But there are so many other ways that the money can be saved. So we'll talk about some other issues in a moment, but just tell me, what's your unique selling point?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. And I think what I need to do is prepare a stock answer. I think the key thing for us is we look to be a long-term strategic partner with our clients. And what I mean by that is I ensure that our team are focused on solving whatever that challenge is that they have. So whilst we offer a lot of off-the-shelf products and services, we'll really tailor our approach to help support them the best we can and think of ways to help improve them, whether that be through safety, whether it be through their levels of compliance, whatever their needs are. We really just try and take that long-term approach with them.
Do people come to you as a distress purchase?
Okay, yeah, often it is. There's usually some motivation for them to come to us. So we do get people come to us. They might have hit a bridge, or they might be expecting a DVSA visit. They might be called to a preliminary hearing. That is occasionally where we hear the first thing. Usually our clients come to us when there's a change of some description. And what I mean by that is it will be that there's maybe a change of personnel, they're losing some expertise, and they want to backfill that whilst it gives them some breathing space to be able to operate, because there's a change of personnel, for example.
Or you might have a change of expertise and personnel where you've got somebody comes in that's really good, and they found that the previous incumbent wasn't really good, and they need your help and support and putting things right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. And I think when I say about USP as well, one of the things we've really focused on is we focus on giving an excellent service, and we've grown organically in that sense, because what happens is we tend to stay with the clients that we work with, but then when there are personnel changes, they'll take us with them, which is amazing too.
Yes, and that long-term relationship is really important, because you understand their business and they understand how you work.
Absolutely.
One of the things we find is that if people had only come to us before they did what they did, well, we'd probably be out of a job and that'd be fine, but they wouldn't then have the trauma that they will often have as a result of something that they've done or not done.
Sure.
Because they've thought, oh, it'll cost me however many £100 for advice, but then look at how many £1,000 it costs them.
Absolutely.
So I think that's really important. So do you actually enjoy what you do?
Do I enjoy what we do? I'm
sorry about the seagull noises, by the way. We are on the Isle of Wight for our viewers and listeners. So
absolutely. It's funny, when you start recording, you notice the outside noises, don't you? So the question was around, what was it? Sorry, again, because I've just been put off by the seagull. Sorry.
The question is all around, first of all, do you enjoy what you do?
Ah, yes.
And you say you do enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
So what is it? What is it that makes you enjoy going to work and doing what you do?
Okay, yeah.
So is it the end result? Is it dealing with the clients? What is it?
Yeah, I think first of all, we've got some wonderful people in the industry. We've got some really, really hardworking folk who are focused on trying to run a profitable business. And it must feel like the whole world's against them when they try and achieve that. And it's really just not an easy job at all. So I love that part of it. And then I'm fascinated by people and behavior, and I really love the development of going, we have this challenge, and knowing if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always got. So how do we advance and improve the behavior of the people in the organizations? How do we influence that through good leadership practice? And those are the things that really fascinate me. And then after all, we've got some terrible statistics around road safety and the number of deaths on the road each day. So I feel, as a purpose-driven person, I feel like it's an excellent vocation to be able to continually grow, evolve, and improve.
The road safety figures are truly shocking. I went to a conference recently, I spoke at it, and National Highways spoke very well. And I can't remember the number of people that are killed on the roads every day. It's certainly at least five.
I think it's five.
And potentially growing. And what this chap said was that on the news, if 20 people are killed or die as they're coming over, crossing the channel, is big news. They don't say five people were killed today on the roads. And there's masses of work that can be done in that area. But you talked before about being an entrepreneur. Mm. Is profit a dirty word?
Oh, I love that. I love that question. And it harks me back to actually the owner of that accident repair centre that I worked with all those years ago. And his statement to me was, Pete, profit is not a dirty word. And he would say that very regularly to us to make sure that we focused on that. So absolutely, profit is not a dirty word. In fact, profit is... It's an outcome from all of the hard work, but also if a business is profitable, it can grow, it can reinvest, it can develop its people. You know, it creates the energy that's needed to be able to fuel advancement and fuel improvement and fuel the country and make everywhere a better place to exist and evolve. So absolutely, profit is not a dirty word at all.
Yeah, I agree with you, provided that compliance, health and safety, etc., is part of that culture, which is all about the culture of the organisation. We also run TMCPC refresher courses, and we spend a bit of time looking at the reasons for non-compliance. Not the symptoms, but the causes, and one of those is culture. What's the culture of the organisation? So in terms of leadership, what advice would you give or do you give to emerging leaders in the sector? I'm sure in the work you do, similar to the one that we do, we sometimes deal with very young businesses, and they're often young men who are working really hard, often supported by their family to grow the business. And you think, oh yes, 10 years down the line, you're going to have a really successful business. What advice do you give, or would you give, to any of our listeners today who are in that category and thinking, what can I learn from Pete?
Sure. So I think there's a couple of bits to the answer. There's certainly no silver bullet, so to speak. But I think the key one for me, so I have three key strands to the answer to this. The first one is what I call leadership around the direction of the organization. So what I mean by that is about having vision, having values, which are the principles under which you want to operate, and that you want to instill in the people who work within your organization. So we need to have these fundamental basics that are non-negotiables around safety and compliance and the standards that we uphold. I think that's really, really important. And then I think there's also this, we have to then energize that performance. So to do that, leaders need to be empathetic. They need to have good levels of understanding of how they impact on other people and how they speak to them, how they behave. How they influence those people to follow that direction. And then finally, investing in people's skills and professionalism and helping to develop and nurture talent in the organisation as well. So it's kind of a three-strand approach.
I think it's really interesting to hear that, because you hear a lot about drivers, the much maligned driver. I love drivers. People don't think I do love drivers, but I do. And you know, when my children were little, I would say, look at that driver reversing the Arctic, you know, with 3 inches either side. They go, mummy, for God's sake. But they do a fabulous job.
Sure.
But to hear some business owners and directors disparage their drivers, disrespect them, not treat them properly, I just think it's such a shame, because they're the backbone of the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why the culture of any organisation, I think, is so important. So we've talked a lot about your work and your business. Do you have time for a home life? Do you have a home? Do you have family? Or
yes,
do you live in a car and hotels?
I do get to go home occasionally. Yeah, I do allow myself that.
Do they say who's this strange person?
Pretty much. Yeah, I like to think I maintain a good balance. But I suppose you'd have to ask my wife. So we've got Maggie and I have four wonderful children.
Wow.
Shannon, the eldest, is off at uni. Very busy at home too. Lots of football. They all play football, and Lolly does cheerleading as well. So yeah, very busy home life. It's quite a balancing act.
And it all passes really quickly.
It does, yeah. It's unbelievable, really, because it only seems like three of mine are very close together in age, and it really does only seem like yesterday that they're all together in like pushchair and just starting to walk. And Tallulah, my youngest, is now at secondary school, and it's quite frightening how quickly they're growing up.
And if any of them wanted to go into transport, would you encourage them or discourage them, or let them make their own mind up?
I would absolutely encourage them into the industry. I would absolutely encourage them into the industry. I think that it's an industry where it's fairly recession proof. I think the economy has no real bearing on levels of profitability and other issues and the challenges that come up. But overall, we always need to have this transport and logistics to be able to survive. And I think,
but at what price? Because I could just almost hear somebody shouting now at the podcast saying, "Does he not know what the profit levels are? How tiny, tiny they are?"
Sure.
Because we've had this race to the bottom.
Yes.
How much is this? Well, I'm going to quote for this because Fred quoted 300, so I'm going to quote 290. I've not actually sat down and worked out it's going to cost me 310.
Yeah, so I think there's a massive gap in the industry for particularly, you know, dealing with startup transport businesses. I think there's not a harder industry for them to try and break into.
Completely agree.
And it's very, very challenging. Very, very challenging indeed. And I think there needs to be some education around the business acumen needed, around understanding what profit is and how to enhance profit, so that we start to move away from, you know, many other industries understand that profit is made from a value proposition. And ultimately, if we only ever try and compete on price and cost, then essentially we just drive down profit and margin for the whole of the industry. And I think that we need to refocus, and that certainly the business owners need to refocus on that value proposition. How are we adding value? What's the level of service that we're offering? What is differentiating us from our competition? And how are we specializing? And I think ultimately the profit is in the specialization.
But that's challenging, because all the customer wants is to get their yogurt from A to B.
Absolutely.
And it's that hidden cost, isn't it? So I do think that's a challenge. So what does the future hold for Flagship Partners?
The future for Flagship, I aim to continue to grow. I aim to continue to have more increasing levels of impact in the industry and innovate new products and services to really tackle the challenges there.
I could say that's a vanilla answer. And I could say, how are you going to have an impact on the industry? How's Pete Rushmer going to have an impact?
Okay, so
you're going to apply to be a TC when the jobs come.
I'm definitely not applying to become a traffic commissioner.
Why not?
I think I'm unemployable.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I'm unemployable.
I've made you think.
Yeah, you have really made me think. But no, I don't have any interest in becoming a traffic commissioner.
No, well, that's
I think that.
But he's just shouting at men for a living. It's a wonderful job.
Yeah. I'm sure there's more to it than that.
To our listeners, I am teasing, of course.
Okay,
so what's the impact you're going to make as Pete of Flagship Partners?
Yeah, I think the challenge in the industry is professionalising the industry. And I think that as we, you know, it's interesting. It would have been really good to have been a fly on the wall on our journey in this morning as we were speaking about this. But there's a lot of opportunity out there for disruption of the status quo of the way the industry is at the moment.
And that's what people like you and I do.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and I think it's a continuation of that disruption and really focusing in on what the challenges are and creating and designing products and services to help resolve those challenges and overcome them for people.
Doing things that are new and innovative.
Yes, absolutely.
That haven't been done before.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, and I don't really want to ask you a lot about diversity because so much is spoken about diversity, but not always followed through in terms of actions. But are there any examples you can give us where you might have more women in a group that's not necessarily representative of the numbers of women in the industry?
Oh, sure. So one of the innovations that I've come up with is I'm a big advocate for peer-to-peer mentoring. And it's something that I've invested in for myself as a business owner and in my own personal and professional development as well. And it's something that we offer as a service to our clients who want to take that. And it's very interesting that we've got 12 in our peer-to-peer mentoring group, of which 5 are women, which I think really demonstrates. And we pick this interesting statistic up through the free networking that we offer as well. So on a monthly basis, on the last Wednesday of the month, we do an hour's free networking where transport managers can come and collaborate and meet. And that's virtual, yeah, online. And it creates a space for them to come in and speak about any challenges they might face, but also meet other people, talk about their career and those kinds of things. And we see a much larger proportion of women come in and join in both our networking. I believe, and this is a generalization, and I need to be careful of that. But overall, I believe there's a generalization that women in the industry tend to be more collaborative. They tend to be better at communicating and sharing ideas, and wanting and having a keenness to learn and continuously improve, rather than necessarily thinking they've got all the answers. And I'm not saying that that isn't something that men do as well, but I think that the truth's there. The truth is there in the statistics that 5 out of 12, I think that's a disproportionate amount of women are wanting to join a peer-to-peer mentoring group to get support, to support others, to be collaborative, to share and learn and work together in a group setting. And I think that's a really positive thing. But I think as an industry, we should be throwing open our doors to have more sessions like that. So,
regardless of whether they're male or female.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So just looking back on your career, we look forward, just looking back, memorable moments.
Memorable moments. I was thinking how to answer this. That there's a story that comes up for me. Very early on in my career, I was inspecting a vehicle on a 4-post lift in a workshop, and it got a hole in the fuel tank. And I've lifted the vehicle up. I'm just an apprentice at the time, very young and naive. And I've lifted the vehicle up on the 4-post lift, and I've had a look underneath, and I've seen the issues. I've seen what needs to get ordered from a parts perspective, what needs repairing. I've lowered the vehicle down on the lift and gone to start it, and it's run out of fuel. So I go to one of the workshop hands who is English as a second language, and I say, "Would you help give me a push off the lift? There's no fuel left in the tank. It won't run." And he was like, "Yeah, boss." So I was like, "Okay." So he started pushing, but I was still winding the window down to try and be able to steer the vehicle off the lift. So the door was open, and I was about to get crushed. I was about to get crushed between the vehicle and the posts of the lift. And I think there's a metaphor in there around communication and making sure we're all on the same page before we just go and take some action. But yeah, that was a pretty memorable moment for me.
And once you'd made that mistake, you're not going to do it.
You're not going to do it.
No, it caused an awful lot of damage, and I was really worried that I was going to get. And I guess from a leadership perspective as well, there's a metaphor and a story in there as well, because it caused a lot of damage to the vehicle, that mistake. And I was very worried for my future career prospects.
Yes,
with
but
the organization.
It didn't cause any injury to you.
No,
that's really true. What matters at the end of the day. It's a lump of metal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in my former life, I dealt with horrible things like fatalities. I still do in my current life, and really serious injuries. And you know, you must deal with it with some of your clients. So we've had a chat. If you were talking to your mother.
Yes.
And said, oh, I'm going to go and do a podcast tomorrow.
Yeah.
And normally you're the one that's doing the podcast and asking the questions. Yep. So the tables are turned a little bit. Mm-hmm. What advice would your mother give you if you're going for a podcast or you're going for an interview? Mm-hmm. What advice would she give you, and would you follow it?
Yeah. Would I follow my mum's advice? There's a question that's probably separate. My parents were really interesting in the balance they gave. So just my dad was really, really principled. He was a policeman. We were speaking yesterday at dinner about this. He's huge moral code around ethics and the way we treat people. And I'm not saying mum wasn't like that, but mum, he would be very strict on me, but mum was almost like visionary in that, Pete, you can be anything you want to be. And, you know, literally, you know, the world's your oyster. It just really helped me to believe in myself. So I think my mum's advice would be around make sure you're confident, make sure you sit up straight, make sure you demonstrate, demonstrate you're worthy of being interviewed and being spoken to. I think it's probably the advice you give. And I'd probably listen to it, to be fair.
So you would follow it?
Yeah, I reckon I would. There was definitely advice you gave me that I never followed at all.
The advice that your father would give you? Tell the truth.
Yeah, tell the truth. Don't ever lie. Play by the rules. He was definitely one for rules. And play by the rules. And
so you could have gone either way. You could have said, yes, okay, I'll do that. Or you could have said, sod that, I'm just going to do my own thing. Did you ever do that when you were at school?
Yeah, so rules are really interesting. Yeah, so I did play along, but I think it's always got to have a purpose. So I've always butted up against. So I do break rules, particularly when I don't see the purpose of them. If there's a purpose,
you'd be a bit of a rebel in there.
Yeah, there is a little bit. If rules have a purpose, then I'm all for them. But I'm not one to react very well if I get told that something's the way it is, and it's because someone says that's the way it is.
And do you have a keen sense of fairness?
Very, yes, very much so. So that's one of my. I've got sort of four personal principles from Stoic philosophy that. And one of them is justice. I think justice is very important, and fairness.
Good job you weren't a lawyer.
What about you, Beverly? What do you think is what would be your advice to your younger self if you were coming on a podcast?
Be yourself.
Okay.
Don't blag it.
Yeah.
Because you'll soon get found out, and people will be laughing as they're listening.
Sure.
And try and keep it relevant to what issues are for people today. That's what I would say. So you have asked me a little question there. You did that very cleverly. I've asked you lots of questions. Sure. We have a little bit at the end, which is sort of turning the tables. Sure. What would you like to ask me? Everything you've ever wanted to ask Beverly Bell, but were frightened to ask.
Well, yeah, I was going to say this is a daunting prospect.
No, it's not.
Beverly, what's your biggest regret professionally?
Would it be awfully arrogant if I said I don't have a big regret? There are some things I would have maybe done differently. But I don't really have regrets. I think you just have to say I've learned from something. There's no point regretting things because it's not a positive energy. There are things I would have done differently. My mother always used to say, Beverly, you can be a little bit petulant, a little bit impetuous. And sometimes I need to think a bit more before I act. But I don't have any massive regrets. Would I do law again? Yes.
Okay.
Would I be a solicitor again? Yes. Would I be a TC again? Yes. Would I do this again? Yes. So I don't have any major regrets. In terms of what I'd tell my younger self,
I suppose if I was 18 again and I was going on to university, which I did, I would say to myself, Beverly, you can do it. You're just as good as everybody else. Don't think you're not as good as everybody else and you can do anything if you set your mind to it. And I think that's important for anybody these days, especially now. I mean, my children are much older than yours. I'm now a granny, a very proud granny. But I've been through the whole angst with children when they're growing up and going to school and going to university. And I think the challenges for them out there are so much greater than they were for people my generation and yours. And there's too much external influences that are not positive, whatever they might be, social media being one of them. And I would say, forget all that. Just go and do what you want to do and believe in yourself. We were talking about this last night, weren't we, where there are some awful websites, there are some awful influences for young people, which are just toxic.
Yeah.
And I suppose I would say exercise more, but I've never achieved that. And so, never too late.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've got to do it because you love it. What do you think is the biggest challenge? What do you think is the biggest challenge that our clients in the transport sector are facing? What's the biggest challenge for them?
Commercially or compliance-wise?
Yeah, the two are different. Let's go with one for each. What's it commercially? What's the biggest challenge?
I think it's the thing we were talking about before, which is that race to the bottom.
Lack of profit.
And also the fact that the 80-20 rule, where you've got 20% of operators are running 80% of the fleet, and they will often try to... they're not just undercut, but they'll be saying, you either take this work or you don't do any work.
Sure.
And I think that's a huge challenge for them. What do I do? You know, some of my clients are like, well, shall I just stop running commercial vehicles, whether it's coaches, buses, lorries? And then compliance-wise, I think the real challenge for them is knowing what they need to do to stay out of difficulty with the regulator. For me, there's huge amounts of ignorance out there. And I don't say that in an arrogant way, but people think they know what they need to do, but they don't, which is why I have a training company. Because I think it's so important that that people in the industry know what's expected of them by the regulators, and not just traffic commissioners, but have the safety executive, all those sorts of things. Because when they say, oh, you don't want to appear before the TC, no, you don't, but you don't want to be defendant number one in the docket at Liverpool Crown Court, because one of your vehicles has killed somebody. And it's that breaking down those myths and increasing the knowledge, that for me is a massive, massive challenge.
Excellent.
Which keeps us both in a job.
It does. Very busy as well.
And a job that we both enjoy, and roles that we don't enjoy. Is there anything that I've not asked you that you would have liked me to ask you? It's a bit like at the end of the PI when I say to the client, is there anything you'd like to tell the traffic commissioner? And that's their cue to say, I'm really sorry, I won't do it again.
Yeah, I feel like I'm like walking through customs. I've got an opportunity. I go, nothing to declare. Oh, shall I not about all this stuff that I'm bringing in that shouldn't be. No, I'm joking. I would never do that. As I said, I'm definitely not a rule breaker.
Unless you don't like the rule, in which case you will.
Well, very true. Unless there's no purpose behind the rule, yeah. Purpose. What should you ask me?
Well, I just wondered if there was anything else.
Good. I think I think I'm thinking too long about that. No.
You think it's too long? Well, obviously, because otherwise it would have just come to you.
Yeah, it would have just come to me. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's been wonderful speaking to you.
No, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, despite the seagulls. Well, thank you very much indeed for travelling all the way down to the Isle of Wight, across the Solent. You've got the delights of Turley Taxi picking you up later, and then back to Peterborough. Busy day ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully going to be back to Peterborough in time for fulfilling some fatherly responsibilities.
Excellent.
Yeah, the most important of all.
It is the most important, because when we're on our deathbed, we don't say, I wish I'd spent more time at the office, do we?
Yeah. Well, that's very true. Yeah, very true.
Well, Pete, thank you very much indeed for coming. It's been a delight talking to you.
Thanks, Beverly. It's been wonderful to come. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we conclude another fascinating journey through the world of transport and logistics, we want to express our sincere appreciation for listening. Your support means the world to us. Keep the conversation going by reaching out on social media with your questions and feedback. We're eager to hear from you and continue exploring together. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and check out our other episodes online. Take care on the roads and see you in the next episode.